Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Samuel Johnson once said that no one is under oath during a eulogy. That is, when speaking about the recently departed, we can exaggerate their good qualities and downplay their bad ones. It happens all the time. But what Johnson did not say is that a eulogy can also be a weapon. In last week's episode, we heard how Napoleon conquered Egypt in 1798. His scholarly savants then looted the country, helping themselves to art and artifacts. And some of those savants realized that the artifacts could help them test a controversial new theory in science, evolution. Nowadays, if you say evolution, the first name that pops to mind is Charles Darwin. But Darwin was not the first person to propose the idea. He had predecessors. One predecessor was someone you might remember dimly from high school biology class, Jean-Baptiste Lamarck. Lamarck is usually portrayed as a foil to Darwin and something of a buffoon. One big reason he is looked down upon is that Lamarck got into a dust-up about evolution with another biologist, George Cuvier. As we'll see, Cuvier was not above fighting dirty. He was half Darwin, half Machiavelli. Cuvier also had something of a secret weapon in his arsenal when fighting Lamarck. Thanks to Napoleon, Cuvier had access to mummies. From the Science History Institute, this is Sam Keen and the Disappearing Spoon, a topsy-turvy, sciencey history podcast, where footnotes become the real story. If you have not heard of George Cuvier, don't worry. But that fact would have stunned people in 1800s France, including Cuvier himself. He and everyone else alive considered him one of the greatest minds in history. Cuvier had bushy hair, a long nose, and a gigantic noggin, a veritable pumpkin atop his shoulders. Although he came from modest means, his quick mind propelled him to the top of the French scientific world around 1800. He served as a professor of natural history, and he advised many important government agencies. In fact, he soon became Baron Cuvier. He had power. Baron Cuvier promoted two big ideas. The first was that species of animals sometimes go extinct. Now, that probably does not sound remarkable today, but it was a radical idea at the time. People in Europe then believed that God had created all the animals on Earth as outlined in Genesis, and it was heresy to suggest that some of God's creations could disappear. Didn't that imply that those animals were less than perfect? But how could they be if God had made them? Cuvier, though, suspected otherwise, based on the fossil record. The first clue came when he recognized an ancient type of elephant. It was first unearthed near Paris, and it had no living descendants. That got Cuvier thinking. And the more he looked around, the more evidence he saw for creatures going extinct. Fossils of giant sloths, frozen bits of woolly mammoths. Such creatures simply don't exist anymore. Now, some people refused to believe Cuvier. One was Thomas Jefferson. When Jefferson sent Lewis and Clark wandering across North America, he told them to keep their eyes peeled for giant sloths and mastodons. Jefferson was convinced they still existed. But no. All those creatures died out long ago. And it was Cuvier who established their disappearance as a scientific fact. Cuvier's second big idea was something called the correlation of parts. This said that every animal has a certain cluster of traits, and that you cannot change any one of those traits without changing the whole animal. For example, consider a lion. It's got big jaw muscles and sharp teeth for tearing flesh. It also has claws to bludgeon prey and forward-facing eyes for the sharp, binocular vision necessary to hunt game. Other carnivores follow a similar body plan. Now consider a zebra, a creature that eats grass. It's got hoofs for speed and flat teeth for grinding plant matter. It also has eyes on the side of its head. That way it can see threats like lions coming from both directions. And again, most grass eaters share those traits. The point is that all the parts work together seamlessly. If a zebra had sharp fangs, it would die. Fangs can't grind grass. Or if a lion had eyes on the side of its head, it could not hunt very well. Again, certain traits go together, and changing any one trait would hinder the animal, probably fatally. Cuvier believes so deeply in this correlation of parts that he used to make a wild boast. He said that if you gave him a bone from an extinct creature, or even a single tooth, he swore he could reconstruct the entire animal. It's an impressive claim, but it's not 100% true. After all, let's say you're a biologist, and let's say you have somehow never seen an elephant in your life. If someone gave you the skeleton, you could probably guess it was a mammal. But your reconstructed elephant would probably look more like a giant fuzzy hamster. That's because the most conspicuous part of an elephant, its trunk, would be missing. It doesn't fossilize, and you can't predict a fleshy feature from a tooth. Cuvier had an impressive mind, no question, but his belief about the tight correlation of parts would eventually get him into trouble. So that was Baron Cuvier. But what about his antagonist, Jean-Baptiste Lamarck? Lamarck became a biologist in a roundabout way. His pushy father made him join the seminary when he was young. But when his father died, Lamarck dropped out, bought a creaky horse, and galloped off to join the Seven Years' War. He was just 17 years old. Lamarck eventually earned a promotion to officer. But Lieutenant Lamarck's career ended with humiliation. His men began playing some game that involved lifting the tiny Lamarck by his head. They eventually injured him, and he had to quit soldiering. But the military's loss was biology's gain. Lamarck returned to school and became a renowned zoologist. His specialty was invertebrates. Leeches, jellyfish, slugs, octopuses, anything slippery. Most biologists then disdained such creatures, but Lamarck showed what a rich class of animals they are. In fact, he invented the term invertebrates for them. Then, in 1800, he went one better and coined the term biology for his whole field of study. But minting words is not what Lamarck went down in history for. That involved his early but misguided theory of evolution. First, let's focus on what Lamarck got right. He believed that all creatures, great and small, descended from a single common ancestor. He also believed that planet Earth was old, vastly older than the Bible said. Unfortunately, Lamarck got other things wrong. Most importantly, he claimed that creatures evolved within their lifetimes. For instance, he suggested that wading shorebirds naturally wanted to keep dry, so they would stretch their legs up to keep their tail feathers above the water. And each day, their legs would stretch microscopically farther. As a result, he argued, the birds eventually evolved long legs. Those long legs were then passed down to their offspring. In a similar way, Lamarck said that giraffes got long necks by stretching up to reach the very tippity tops of trees to eat leaves. Then they passed those necks on to baby giraffes. The process supposedly worked in human beings, too. Consider blacksmiths. After swinging hammers year after year, blacksmiths supposedly passed their impressive musculature down to their children. Overall, Lamarck saw animal bodies as quite plastic. He even talked about animals willing themselves to change by following instincts and urges. Nowadays, though, we know that Lamarck was off base here. Body plans are far more rigid than he suggested. Giraffes just can't will themselves to have a longer neck. Traits like that are largely set by our DNA. This was a pretty big mistake on his part. And as a result, Lamarck is often painted as a buffoon in textbooks. Again, he's the foil to Charles Darwin's much more correct theory of evolution. But I think that's unfair to Lamarck. He was one of the first people in history to propose that evolution occurred, as well as descent from a common ancestor. Yes, he got some of the details wrong, but those were bold ideas in the early 1800s. Unfortunately, in proposing evolution, Lamarck drew the wrath of none other than Baron Cuvier.
Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through work with relevant real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Cuvier and Lamarck actually collaborated when they first met in 1700s Paris, if not as friends, then as friendly colleagues. Temperamentally, though, they were just too different. They slowly grew to dislike each other, and the idea of evolution in particular enraged the Baron. Remember, Cuvier believed in the correlation of parts. All an animal's parts fit together seamlessly. Teeth, claws, eyes, everything. So how could any one part evolve or change? If it did, the animal's perfect balance of parts would fall apart. Evolution was therefore impossible. Species were fixed. But as a good scientist, Cuvier did not just rely on arguments. He wanted evidence. And he found that evidence in ancient mummies. In short, Cuvier said that if evolution did occur, we should see evidence for it in ancient mummies. If cats or birds from way back then looked markedly different than cats or birds now, evolution had occurred. But if they didn't, evolution had not occurred. Now, back then, this was a novel approach to resolve a biological controversy. Naturalists then were mostly catalogers, like Carl Linnaeus and his elaborate genus-species naming system. Biologists just collected things. They saw what was out there and sorted them. Most biologists didn't even care about behavior. Cuvier did something different. He had a question in mind. Did animals evolve and change over time or not? Then he went searching for evidence to support or refute that hypothesis. It was a very modern approach. So Cuvier started examining the ibis bird mummies that Napoleon savants had brought back from Egypt. Cuvier then compared those mummies to modern ibis specimens. And lo and behold, he found that they looked exactly the same. The birds had the same beaks, the same plumage, the same bones. They hadn't evolved at all. Lamarck was therefore wrong. Evolution did not occur. Now, Lamarck did not take this criticism lying down. He argued that there was no reason for the ibises to have evolved. The environment of ancient Egypt was pretty much the same in the 1800s as it was in 2000 BC or whatever. The same sand, the same heat, the same predators. Nothing would drive the ibises to change. Therefore, they didn't. Today we know Lamarck was largely correct. Without environmental drivers, evolution can stand still for ages. Plus, we now know that Earth is billions of years old. So a lack of evolution over a few thousand years means nothing in the grand scheme of things. But to most people back then, Lamarck's arguments looked weak. Meanwhile, Cuvier had real evidence in favor of his ideas, the mummies. Add in Baron Cuvier's political power and superior social status, and the outcome was inevitable. Cuvier won the debate. Evolution had seemingly been put to the test, its first real test, and it had come up short. Now, perhaps over time, Lamarck could have gathered some evidence of his own and won his scientific peers over. Unfortunately, Lamarck did not live much longer after this and lost all chance to defend himself. Lamarck's academic position had always been precarious. He studied worms and slugs, things that no one cared about. Then he started promoting wild, heretical theories about evolution. He'd also slowly been going blind. This forced him to retire early. Lacking fame and income, he soon became a pauper, wholly reliant on a daughter's care. When he died in 1829, he could afford only a so-called rented grave, meaning that his remains got just 5 years' rest underground before they were unearthed and dumped into the Paris catacombs to make room for a new occupant. But the biggest blow to his posthumous reputation came courtesy of Cuvier. As one of his many official jobs, Cuvier composed eulogies for the French Scientific Academy's main journal, and he used these eulogies to undermine colleagues that he did not like. Cuvier's specialty was damning with faint praise. He opened Lamarck's obit by lauding his late colleague's dedication to vermin, creatures that no one else cared about. Still, honesty then compelled Cuvier to point out the many, many times that his dear friend Jean-Baptiste had strayed into ridiculous speculation about evolution. Cuvier also turned Lamarck's gift for imagery against him. He sprinkled the essay with caricatures of elastic giraffes and soaking wet stork butts. These became indelibly linked to Lamarck's name. Cuvier summed things up by saying, "A system resting on such foundations may amuse the imagination of a poet, but it cannot for a moment bear the examination of anyone who has dissected the hand, the viscera, or even a feather." Overall, the eulogy deserves the title of cruel masterpiece that one science historian gave it. And in a Machiavellian way, you do have to hand it to the Baron here. To most of us, writing those elegies would have been a pain in the neck. But Cuvier saw that he could parlay this burden into great power, and he had the savviness and wit to pull it off. I find this story intriguing for several reasons. First, history tends to sort people into winners and losers, into heroes and villains. In science history, the heroes are the ones who come up with the true theories, while the villains focus on wrong ideas. But things aren't so clean with Cuvier and Lamarck. Cuvier was wrong about evolution, but he was correct about extinction, a very important idea in biology, especially nowadays. Meanwhile, Lamarck was correct about evolution occurring, but he got pretty much all the details wrong. It's ambiguous who to root for here. I also love that this story hinged on mummy mania. Had Napoleon not invaded Egypt with his savants, and had mummies not been such an object of fascination for people, Cuvier's Ibis test never would have happened. As it was, the test did happen, and the results set back the acceptance of evolution in Europe for decades, especially in France. French biologists all remembered how silly the mummies made Lamarck look, and they trembled in fear of being humiliated by another Cuvier. Finally, I love seeing how the public attitude about mummies has come full circle. As mentioned last episode, the Egyptians venerated mummies, treated them as akin to gods. Then their empire collapsed, and people started using their mummies to make paper and paint, grinding them up into mulch, selling them as souvenirs. They desecrated them. But nowadays, we've swung somewhat back toward the Egyptian ideal. We don't fill mummies with the same supernatural longings, obviously. But we put them on pedestals, gawk at them behind glass, and take great pains to preserve them. We hold them in the awe that their makers knew they deserved. This is the Disappearing Spoon podcast, brought to you by the Science History Institute. Be sure to check out their in-depth science history podcast, Distillations. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts or on their website, distillations.org. You can find more incredible stories in my books or at samkeen.com. You can also book me as a speaker there for your school or event. If you like this podcast, please spread the word and support it at patreon.com/disappearingspoon. You can also get bonus episodes and signed books at Patreon. This episode was written by me, Sam Keen. It was produced by Mariel Carr, Rigoberto Hernandez, and Sarah Kaplan. Our sound design, scoring, and mixing is by Row Home Productions. Row Home's creative director is Alex Lewis. John Myers is Row Home's executive producer. Thanks for listening.
Row Home Productions.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.